Good evening, everyone, and welcome along to the Wise Men Say podcast. Unfortunately, this week we had a slight technical issue, which meant that there was a lot of crackle on the mics, and we couldn't really work out why it was happening. So we apologise for that, but if you wish to persist with listening to the podcast, then go ahead, and we'll hopefully have the issue sorted for next week. Still worth listening, probably, apart from the last sort of 10 minutes. I wouldn't bother with that if I was you, but the rest of it's sort of passable by our standards. So enjoy, and we'll see you next week.
We never doubted it, did we? This is the Wise Men Say. I'm Stephen Goldsworth with Gareth Barker, and we have a win to talk about. Nick Barnes, Sunderland's commentator for the BBC, is here. How was Ben Orr's enthusiasm last night?
Oh, unsurpassed.
Bit of unexpected.
Part of that was
though,
the wine, actually.
Did you get a sense that people weren't confident about last night, though?
Yeah, I wasn't. And I think on the back of the Southampton and Arsenal games, I still think there was a fragility about the team. And I thought, you know, Palace of all places to go, when you know, on a Monday night, under the lights, they're going to have a go at you. It was the situation with the two teams being in and around the bottom three. It was all the classic ingredients for a feisty, in-your-face sort of game, and I wasn't sure that Sunderland were really equipped going into the game to face one like that after those two
I'm
previous
not sure
games.
Many of us were, and you've got a nice in and around in early in the podcast there. I'm happy about that. Craig Clark is back as well. He's got a great story about yesterday at a cash point, haven't you?
I saw Kevin Kilbane.
Fantastic
that
story,
was it.
That, isn't it?
That was it. Story over.
Absolutely great.
Should have went up to him and had a word.
I'm glad you're both here, though, because you were at the game. And obviously, Gareth and myself just watched it on the telly, so it's always nice to get a different viewpoint. Crystal Palace came out like a train, Craig. Like everyone thought they would, to be fair. The first 8 minutes, fair to say we got away with one. We'll get the penalty thing out of the way now, because I don't want to go on about too much. Stormwaller, though, yeah.
Probably the wrong person to ask. You couldn't really see from
Could
where
you
we
not?
Were. No. Like, it's
okay,
difficult.
Yeah, I guess I was watching
anyway.
The telly, you'd probably
yeah.
have a better idea, couldn't
to
you?
The other end of the pitch. And
was your heart in your mouth, for instance?
Oh, yeah. And then, obviously, like, there's two or three of you standing together. The texts come through. Definitely a penalty. Virginia on, was it Campbell, I think?
So, but
then you think, I know we ended up conceding 8 at Southampton, but we could have had a penalty there and maybe a goalkeeper sent off, and we didn't get that. So I'm sure it doesn't make Palace fans feel any happier, but it maybe balances out a little bit.
Which is the typical Sunderland, though, Nick, because we saw them collapse away to Southampton. We saw them collapse away to Spurs last season. But also last season, we saw them go down early to Man City when everyone thought that was going to happen again. And they showed real character, and again last night. Strange team to work out.
They are. I thought there was a bit more about them last night, just watching them in the first half hour, even though they weren't creating chances. I mean, I'd said to Benno, actually, on the half hour, I think, that Sunderland hadn't got into the final third and really troubled Speroni at all, and then 30 seconds later Fletcher scores and Sunderland go one up. But just had the feeling about the game that there was something about the way Sunderland were holding themselves and playing. They just looked as though they had a bit more of the confidence returning, and I even felt that when Palace equalised that Sunderland could still go back in front, which is what happened. You know, you're looking for the third then, just for that comfort zone, and you always fear that Palace may have got an equaliser. The point wasn't any good to anybody last night, but I just sort of, it was one of those games. I said to Gus afterwards, you know, did he feel on the touchline it was one of those where, you know, you could sense it was going to be Sunderland's night?
Well, we'll hear from Gus now about last night's game.
You will in a minute. I'm going to press play.
Until the penalty, the own goal, yes. When we scored the own goal, I thought, no, back to basics. You know, it's football. It's so little between the teams, so I always tell you, it's a decision for you, against you. It's one goal, it's one kick. It's very tough. It's not easy, because I don't think there is, apart from two or three teams at the top, I don't think there is a team that they can control the game to a point that you suffer. And that gives you that chance that even without playing fantastic or doing less than other days, you can get a win in this league, because it's very, very difficult. Hampton was a terrible accident that I would like to erase it, you know, like gone, delete. Arsenal is nothing you can do, you know, when you make those mistakes. It's the other part of the game, we were the best that we could against a good Arsenal. So it was about coming back to normal, feeling that even you know, away from home, you can play your game and you can create chances and you can score goals. That's the feeling that we take today. And a good mention to the fans, no? They had a terrible travel back from Southampton, which is a long one. This is another quite long one, so they're going to be going back home quite happy today.
I cut the interviewer out there because he's generally a bit rubbish, Nick.
No, fair comment.
How was he though last night? He wears his heart on his sleeve, because when you talk to him,
he was bouncing. I mean, completely different mood. Funnily enough, to last week. I mean, you were there on Friday, wasn't it? When we were looking forward to the game, and he was spiky. He was sidestepping issues. Clearly, you know, he wasn't in the best frame of mind last night. In a very very ebullient mood afterwards.
He wouldn't be a great poker player, would he?
No. No, he was. He does wear his heart on his sleeve, and he's last night he was clearly delighted. And yeah, although he sort of denied that pressure was starting to get to him in the last week, I think it probably was.
Gareth, you were more optimistic than most before the game. Anyway, I remember you and Craig having a conversation. Crystal Palace weren't. I've just said they came out like a train, and the first 8 minutes it was all hassle. And after that, though, they didn't really have much, did they?
Yeah, it's what you'd expect. You just ran out of ideas, quite quickly. But they're always a threat when you've got the pace that they had. But and you're hoping that you're not going to give them too many opportunities to put those balls into the box. Or like there was a period at the start of the second half where they had four corners in a row and stuff like that. And you think, well, if you're giving someone four or five corners in a row, you're gonna give something
Zaha
away.
And Bolasie, you talk about pace. Those
but
two
end product's non-existent. The thing, those two, isn't it?
But the thing was the end product. Buckley was having a nightmare at one point with Zaha. It's causing. I mean, Buckley got booked, didn't he, in the end, because the only way he could get him off his back was literally leap on his back. But you know, as you say, they had an end product. Those two.
Yeah.
Well, it's funny, Bolasie. I had my brother-in-law text us saying how bad he thought he was watching it on telly. Then after the game. A lad I was talking to said he thought he was their best player, so I don't know.
We have that with Buckley here, to be fair, every week. Don't we? Everybody has a different opinion on generally.
I know that was Bolasie, not Buckley.
No,
I don't think I know anyone who thought Buckley played well.
No, not last night, but I think last week we were talking about it, saying he was a bit of a Marmite player. But anyway, digressing a little bit. Talking about end product,
didn't
he? Talking about end product, though, Nick. Stephen Fletcher's a joy to watch when he's in form like this.
Well, I think he is in form at the minute. I'm, you know, chatting to him last week about, you know, his pre-season when he looked sharp, and it was a bit of a mystery as to why it went a bit awry at the start of the season and he got dropped after Queen's Park Rangers. But you know, maybe put that down partly to the tactics that Gus was playing. But since he's come back in against Stoke, you can't fault him. I mean, he wasn't at fault at Southampton, and he wasn't at fault against Arsenal. I mean, he can only do what he can do if he gets the service, and he's just not been getting it. But last night, you know, when he's proved the balls are played into him, I mean, the second goal he scored, lovely finish, fantastic finish.
But I mean, we've mentioned this before, Craig, we haven't been critical of him previously. We've questioned whether he could play that role, but he's doing more, isn't he? I mean, you know, the little drag back and spin on the ball he did after he scored the goal, it was beautiful to watch, and that's just a striker in confidence but looking interested as well, isn't it?
There were periods where it wasn't just whether he could play the role. He did genuinely look well out of sorts. I don't know, fitness or if his head was elsewhere, but he just looked, I don't know, like half the player he does at the moment. And it's funny because on other occasions, sometimes the ball wasn't really sticking in the sort of final third last night, but you wouldn't level it at him. It was more the two players wide of him who were just giving it away really badly.
Benno's big gripe is that, you know, you watch where Fletcher is on the pitch. At times he's on the halfway line having to come back and get the ball. And then when you're trying to push into the final third, when you're trying to get the ball in the penalty area, well, Fletcher's on the ball and there's nobody in the box.
Yeah,
he can't do both. And he does get frustrated. I mean, admitted to me last week, that is frustrating for him. And you can see that. You know, he's in form at the minute. He's got no niggles. His ankle's absolutely fine. He's happy. His frame of mind's good. He's playing well at Scotland. Scotland are doing well. At the minute for him, it's all coming together.
So how do you counter that, I suppose? If he's coming too deep and he's feeling frustrated, and I'm assuming Gus would like to see more of him in the box, or certainly getting into those goal-scoring positions, we obviously need someone who's going to
drive on and link it. Comes with confidence, a lot of that as well, though. Gareth, Fletcher scored a brace against Stoke, and we said a big part of that was down to the fact that Wickham was playing close to him and being involved himself. Now, from where we watched it, didn't look like that was evident last night. So it's even more credit to Fletcher that he's done that without the help of Wickham, I guess.
Yeah, I think last night I think it was, you know, pretty clear that we're quite direct. I don't think we played the ball out from the back as much. We tried to go forward quickly and hit Wickham, hit Buckley because they're tall.
And we asked Gus to make subtle changes like that.
Yeah, he did. I mean, if you look at the games against Stoke and Crystal Palace, he has made people do accuse him of doing the same thing, and that there is subtleties in what he's doing, and you can see that in the game against Stoke and against Palace. He was more direct, and maybe that's something they can look at, getting more balls into the box for someone like Fletcher coming onto it, because his header was an absolutely brilliant header. And he said before he signed for Sunderland, he was the leading headed goal scorer in all top European leages, and he comes to Sunderland.
We don't think of him as a header.
But he didn't score a header in his first season at Sunderland. I think his first header was that one against Palace last year.
Especially with someone like O'Neill managing him initially, you would have thought that's one of the primary focuses of his game. McLean and Johnson on the wings,
and you were thinking, right, there's going to be crosses raining in, and he got nothing. But he still scored 13 goals or whatever.
It was that lone striker thing. But it was with Sessegnon supporting, it just never really worked, I don't think.
I think, you know, at the moment, Sessegnon's the kind of player that we could do with, that kind of player, because...
Beno's take is Barini's the player that Gus is missing. He said because the way the team set up was absolutely perfect for Barini, and he's not in the team, and that's suffering as a consequence.
I mean, Wickham...
I was going to ask people what they thought about Wickham.
Gee, me.
I could have Craig, because Craig looks disgusted.
It was appalling.
He frustrates me. I think he worked hard last night. He tried to put his body a bit more on the line, but... to me, there's just no end product with him. He's a bit headless.
He just runs into people all of the time. When he gets on the ball,
it's like the Wickham we saw before. That little surge in form last season.
It's the exact problem we had at the end of last season. Was he was going to be out of contract in a year, and we all knew it. And he'd come off the bat of a purple patch, so he was holding all the sort of aces, if you like.
Now the club would say, come on.
Well, that's it, isn't it?
So, the ace is now held by the club. I mean, he's in a situation where he doesn't want to sign. He's in a situation where he's not playing as a centre-forward. You know, at the minute, his world's falling apart around him because he's just not the player he was at the end of last season.
But he's going to leave for, nothing.
Well, then who's going to take him?
But we'd get the money in the tribunal.
You wouldn't get what we paid for.
I bet you'd get 5 or 6 million quid.
I don't think so.
I think you would, because of what we paid for him.
Who's going to take him? Who've got 5 or 6 million pound?
Somebody.
Promoter clubs would look straight away at a player who's been in the Premier League. But, absolutely. You know, we don't want to go too far down that road.
I just thought he was disgraceful, like.
Don't mince your words.
But he's the sort of player. I mean, I was thinking about this over the last week or two about certain players. Johnson was one that came to mind that we'll all write off and say their attitude stinks or whatever. And then suddenly, within a week, they can pop up like Wickham did last season and score for 3 out of 4 games. And suddenly, everyone's writing different headlines and different stories about them. You know, I think what's been shown in the last fortnight is that things can change very, very quickly. You know, you look at Southampton, and all the talk at 2 o'clock on Saturday afternoon, 3 o'clock, was about the flapping screen at St James's Park and Newcastle having to beat Leicester. 2 hours later, the talk is all of Sunderland in crisis. They've lost 8-0, and everything's sweet and rosy at St James's Park.
You're right, but I think on the point of Wickham, it's becoming abundantly clear to me anyway that it last season was certainly a flash in the pan. Because the record beforehand, yes, he is young, but I mean the record beforehand, and now afterwards, yes, he scored this season. He had a good game against Stoke.
It looks like a spike now, doesn't it?
That's probably like the only good game he's had. I mean, when the ball goes up to him, you might as well chuck a wrecking ball at a blancmange. It's pointless. It's just he just crumbles on the floor. I mean, what is he wearing? One of like an inflatable muscle suit or something like that? Honestly, for a big lad.
It's odd. He's looking at him, his physique, you would think he had all the physical strength in the world.
There should be a bit more finesse. I agree with Gareth in the sense that, now the number of games he's played and the level at which he's playing at, something should have been coached into him, and you're just wondering what.
I just don't understand why he's like, there's a negativity around him. He doesn't look like he enjoys playing football. Like we said this before, Like before, he had that little spurt last season. Before he had that little spurt at the end of the season, I was massively critical of him. But we talked about he doesn't look like he wants to be there. He doesn't look like he wants to be out there, and that's how he looks at the moment. And even in the game against Stoke, there was still an element of this kind of like arrogance about him, like a lack of awareness. Like it's like, well, this is what I can do. This is how good I can be. It's like, well, why didn't you do that every week then?
Being young's not enough as well. You need to want it. You need to be hungry. Like, yeah. You know, you mentioned like he's young, and I've said that as well as a sort of means of caveat. But he's got a lot at a young age. Like, I always think of the comparison between him and, say, Colback and Henderson, who started on young players' wages, if you like. And they've come through, earned more money. He's come in on, I don't know his salary, but, you know, it's probably going to be a decent salary, isn't it? And he's come in at that level. He hasn't had to earn it.
Now he's demanding 60,000 a week, by all accounts.
Is he?
Well, he's going to be lucky to get that anywhere, and he's, ever.
As you say, does he look interested? I agree with you. I think Gareth hit the nail on the head. I don't think he is that interested in playing football,
which makes it, you know, sort of alarming that he's getting into the starting 11, I guess. And I want to ask you lads about Altidore last night, because you were there. Now, on the telly, his input looked minimal, but I just want to know why he played. Did he replace Wickham and go straight in the left wing, or did he play closer to Fletcher?
He was out on the left, wasn't he?
Can't remember much about him.
No, he came back and made one tackle in the sort of left back position, I remember, because he was right in front of me.
He didn't imprint his presence on the game last night,
thank
from
God.
What I can remember.
We can joke about Altidore and say what we like about Altidore. Is Wickham doing enough to keep somebody like Altidore on the team to do the same role?
Let's put it this way. He did his classic turn round and run into someone and give a free kick away when the ball's in the air. Wickham, for all he's terrible, that is just a basic thing that you can't do in football. Why can he not learn that you can't, wait, the ball bounces over, you can't just turn and run into somebody? Like, that is basic football skills. Like, it's 101. Like, get your... I've just got no time for him.
You need to come up with an analogy about a Blancmange and a Wrecking Ball. That won't be better this season, I can guarantee it.
Obvious option would be Johnson, who actually does work hard and track.
I want to mention that, because we'll stick with the sub. So what do we think... How do we think it made an impact on it then? Because, like I say, Nick, people were screaming at the telly all over Wayside, I'm sure, saying, get Johnson on. Get Johnson on for Wickham. He puts Altidore on. Now, for whatever reason, it's worked. Is that just the shape? It's sort of more direct, as Gareth was saying earlier.
Probably was the shape.
Just to get the ball away from the danger area?
Yeah. I mean, you can't... You know, hindsight now, you know, he got it right, didn't he? I mean,
he always does with his subs, doesn't he?
Well, I don't think he did.
He does a lot.
Southampton and Arsenal, I think he got the subs completely wrong.
Under Burnley.
Burnley. I retract the way I have phrased that then. But
I know what you mean, Steve. I agree. He usually has a good game plan. And we were all kind of screaming, get Wickham off, especially, but also Buckley or Gomez. There was the three of them, Buckley and Gomez linked up for a goal.
Yeah.
Despite doing not a great deal else in the game. So, I he's vindicated. His game plan worked.
Mm-hmm. Tell me about Gomez,
that was down to... Well, Gomez... he's a neat and tidy player for me. I don't think he keeps possession well, but he's not an attacking midfielder. He's always going to get the ball, hold it, play it off, hold it, play it off. But he's never going to burst into the penalty area. He's not going to be a marauding sort of...
Like
holding.
Jack Colback in a way?
Yeah, a little bit. But you see that, you know, Gomez is another one. You think, well, what's he adding to the team in terms of attack? And then he'll produce a goal like that last night, at Birmingham City. You know, so he likes to have a go. Give him his due. He's happy to have a punt from 25 yards, 30 yards. He wants to take the free kicks. But I think he's a tidy player, and I'm not convinced that sometimes in the way the team's set up or the personnel they've got in that 11 that he complements it. He's almost in some ways.
Enough.
No, that's he's a bit of a luxury player in a sense. If you've gone 2-0 up and you want to contain the game and hold it, great. But if it's nil and you want to get one up, I don't think Gomez is the player.
Does that help in a game like yesterday's or Gareth? Because when a team like Palace are going to be high intensity coming at you, it helps to have a player like that. Now, whenever Gus is asked about Gomez, he says he controls the game. So is that what he means? Now, it might not look great. Nick's just said there, he isn't really authoritative. He doesn't have loads of ball. He gave it away last night.
In other games, I think he's holding it a bit better than he did last night. I thought last night he was giving it away quite a lot.
But then so was a few others,
who,
I guess.
Who, yeah, exactly. Yeah.
He's the most bizarre player I can remember seeing for Sunderland.
Elaborate.
I just can't. I just don't understand.
I want another analogy about the Blancmange.
I don't know. It's just I'm not saying he's bad at all. I just I've never seen a player like. I've said it before. It's like he's in his own little.
You felt similar about Jack Colback, though, didn't you?
No, it's different.
You weren't for Colback,
it's different.
Though,
this is different. I'm not saying it. I'm not talking about the style of play or anything. Every like. It is, you know, like in
well, what are you talking
in, Father, in Father Ted when the priest over 75's annual yeah. football five aside. That's what it's like watching him play.
Yeah,
but he's not out of his depth. I can't understand it. When he passes the ball, it's like going da dunk da dunk da dunk da dunk. But it gets there. I can't understand it. I've never seen anything like it. Even his goal, he was like the ball came across and it was like da dunk da dunk da dunk. And then he was like kind of winding up for this shot.
He opened his body up great, to be fair.
But it didn't go in with any pace. It just kind of like.
But the accuracy was on
there.
Yeah.
The gap, didn't
no,
it,
it just went in. The gap. But it's weird.
The only place that would have went I'm in never, at that speed and that.
I've pace. Never seen. Like, he always looks like he's going to get caught on the ball. Like, all. He never looks. He's cool, but he never looks like. He's under pressure. He looks like he's going to give it away every time. It's weird. I've never seen anything like it.
Well, like, following on from what Nick was saying, I'm not really sure what his role is. So you can see what Larsson brings, you can see what Catmull brings. I know he scored, see, I suppose he brought a goal, but what does he...
A lot of teams do have these players who are just known as continuity players, but generally they're surrounded by, like Nick said, players with autonomy and stuff, and we don't have that. So I guess it's just more notable that he isn't
but
doing a lot.
If he was what was he brought in to be?
Yeah, what was he brought to? I mean,
was he not just a speculative signing because he was available, though, because he was on a free,
you look at him and you think he should be able to do... Catamol's role rather than Bridcut, but you're not convinced he's
not tenacious
strong
enough
to sit in that and do what Catamol does. So is he a Larsson? No, because he doesn't run around and he's not a natural sort of winger
people.
Or yeah, sort of doesn't shout and talk with referees all the time. And, yeah. And is he an attacking midfield? Well, you know he's not, so he's playing further forward. That's not his role. I was never convinced by him at Wigan, but
no.
I'm not sure what to make of him.
You don't know, I mean he does good things. He created a goal against West Brom.
He's quite easy on the eye as well.
He created goals at Tottenham. the equaliser.
He
scored at Birmingham. He scored. So he's
Instead
doing
West Brom as well.
He's doing things. That's what I said. Yeah. He's doing stuff. Mm.
But is he good enough to have in the team not doing things for long
spells? What I would say is, in a situation last night, and it does show a weakness in the squad where Rodwell's out. Now, he might have been thinking, I'll play Rodwell. But if you... Gomez isn't a replacement for Rodwell. No. So it's not like... So it's like, well, how does that affect things if you're going to bring... a player like Gomez in to replace Rodwell, do you have to change the way you're going to play, which affects things?
Well, what about the fact that we had to take a left back off and put a centre back to right back and a right back to left back, who was playing his first game and played very well
but
when you looked at Van Aanholt getting down that line, he's offering width. I'm not defending Wickham, but you know, it completely imbalances the side having this right footed left back. You're suddenly a right back, to be fair, Virginie could have scored twice. He was getting forward pretty well, but he's not going to really get on the outside and put balls in. So you really want Buckley to do that, and it wasn't happening for him in that sense. So suddenly the whole team, you're wondering, well, what's the shape? What's the plan?
Well, it's very disappointing about Van Aanholt, Nick. But I mean, people know now that I think he's been fine of the season. I think he's a great player. And we were just saying after the Stoke game, you know, we had Jones and Van Aanholt, and it changed the whole dynamics of the side. Now we have both of those guys injured. And that's a worry,
isn't
it? It's
the same old perennial problem, isn't it? A left back. Just finally find one, and now he's injured. And you've inevitably got a right back playing across on the left, and Reveillet did very well. I mean, and clearly now what looks like will happen is that he'll play there for the next however many weeks.
Jones should be back soon, shouldn't he?
Jones, I think, is another couple of weeks, isn't it?
So he'd be due.
Just about come back for the.
But you're not going to rush
him
back.
Jones can play at left back.
Yeah, exactly. So
the other concern is, of course, that we get one more injury or one suspension, we literally have no defenders.
Well, he said last night that a couple of youngsters will have to come up into the first team squad, because Thomas Robson's the only other left back.
And there's a centre back that they quite like, isn't there? I can't remember what he's called. He's a midfielder.
He's
signed a contract last week.
Martin Smith it's one of Martin Smith's, he was telling us the other night, I can't remember his name.
But Tom Bradley or something? Tom, I don't know, I just made that up.
These players at the moment aren't even on the bench. You know, it is a concern that we've got so few numbers at the back. Look, we won the game, so you don't want to be too negative, but we've won it at a cost that... We've always been very close to being crisis point at the back.
The big thing is the momentum now, I mean, into the Everton game, because, I mean, they've got a nice foundation to go into the international break with a win or a draw against Everton and just got that little bit of breathing space, because the other fixtures for the teams down there aren't favourable for them. And if you can just get to the international break and you can be 3 or 4 points clear of the bottom three, you've given yourself, you've bought yourself a bit of time, you've got, you know, mixed fixtures up to Christmas. Not necessarily to say it's going to look rosier at Christmas. Benno and I were trying to work out points up to Christmas and then work it out for the season, and still think
you never get those right. You shouldn't do that. You never get that right.
But the thing is, whatever way you look at it, it still looks like it's going to be a scrap at the end of the season.
But you mentioned momentum going into the Everton game. Now, well, it'll be broken up a little bit because he has to change the team. We've just said that he's going to have to. The back four might stay like it, finish the game, possibly will. Midfield, he will have to make a change. Catamol suspended. Now, Bridcut's going to play. There's no doubt about that. Even if Rodwell was fitting, people say Rodwell might stay there. Nick knows. He comes out all the time and says Bridcut knows that role 100%. There's not a doubt in my mind Bridcut will play. What was great for him was... Now, we've mentioned that he's been getting stick possibly definitely unfairly from some sections of the fans. Now, you know, isn't that great for him that he robs somebody of the ball and gets an assist to his name? That's going to make him feel better.
Talked about momentum going into the next game.
When I saw him come on, I thought, is he the player you want to come on now?
Yeah.
Especially in a defensive capacity, but actually he did all right.
He was fine, wasn't he?
Just what he needed though as well, wasn't it? Well, because he's going to start the next game.
Yeah. I'll tell you what, Catamol's form's dipped a bit as well, and if he can really,
if he'd sat on the bench and watched, you know, if it goes made another change and we'd still won the game 3-1 or 2-1 or whatever, he's not involved in that as well, and he thinks, all right, I'm starting next game. So it was
clever management, actually.
Yeah, it's great to put him on and get him involved.
I didn't think of that. It's clever management, that. I think he's done that with the next game in mind, knowing Catamol's out. And I didn't even consider it. But he has a chance to make a mark because he knows I'm starting this game. Yeah. Like if he plays well enough, Catamol...
Similar situation with the goalkeeper, of course.
Yeah, I thought Pantelimon, apart from his distribution, was pretty good.
I think
Manone's distribution is great, by the way.
His is terrible.
He's got a bit awry the last few weeks, but I think that's probably indicative of his general demeanour. He's been a bit fragile.
I can't recall Bridcut starting a game and playing particularly badly.
No, I don't think so.
When he's come on as substitute, he's struggled at times.
He just throw himself in the tackles like Catamol, so the fans don't see it like that, do they?
But I think in games where he started, I think he's been fine.
The only one I thought was poor was the Birmingham game.
The cup.
St Andrews, yeah.
Well, I didn't
none of us watched that, Nick, because you can't get that on the dodgy side.
Didn't think he had a great game at all. I just thought he was too negative. I just thought he sat and didn't. It was classic, get the ball and play it backwards. I'm too terrified to push it forward. And
he did look like he lacked confidence.
It was a championship team. Struggling championship team. I thought he didn't stamp any authority on it.
Didn't you think the Gomez was equal?
You could have pointed the finger at a lot of players that night. And they were poor. First half especially.
Because they just came at us quick.
Yeah, they did.
On the wings.
What date is it? What are we talking about?
I know, but it's important.
I know.
We need him to not be that player, I suppose, on the weekend.
He's got to impose himself.
And he's up against the team, which is going to be difficult, isn't it?
Yeah.
That's a good test for him, but he should embrace the challenge, shouldn't he?
Yeah, I think
you'd hope so.
I think that's the thing about last night as well. It was, you know, the past couple of weeks, you know, the character of the team's been questioned, and last night, that I don't think the Arsenal game was the right game for them to answer it in. I know they competed in the Arsenal game. They could have had a point if they hadn't done what they did. And I would, you know, you look at some of the games over the weekend and they were equally as dour as that one. You know, Newcastle got the edge over Liverpool and it's a very similar game to that Arsenal game. Mm. It's just sometimes the way it goes. And if you stay in the game, you've got a chance of getting a result. That's what they did last night.
And it shows the players are on side still as well, doesn't it?
Yeah, but I mean, as a unit, they weren't at the best. As a team, they weren't at the best. It wasn't like last season at the end where they were playing really well.
No, it wasn't vintage at all, was it?
But you've got to win the mini battles in the game, and they defended well because, the own goal was, you know, they restricted them to one shot on target, which led to the goal. The own goal is just one of, in this situation, I wouldn't say it was one of those ludicrous ones. I mean, he's getting back in to try and defend. He switched off, to be fair. He's trying to do something about it, and it's just one of those things where it's gone off the post.
Credit to Larsen and Buckley as well. They were doubling up on Balassi and Zaha. They were doubling up in the penalty area players. O'Shea was one of his best games where he's reading it. He's getting in front of Brown and tidying up. And so as a unit, they did play well, and Ravier slotted into that. Yeah.
Special mention for O'Shea, Craig, because I've been a critic in the past. Now, I know he is the captain, but I always look at him and Brown, and I always think Brown's a more authoritative of the two, generally. But the last few weeks, that's changing, definitely.
Brown, I like him, but I think he gets the plaudits because he makes showy tackles.
He gets in, he's in your face, isn't he? I mean, O'Shea, to me, is the thinker, and Brown's the thumper.
That's why I like O'Shea better.
And that's why there's a relationship that works well
I agree with that, but I still think that O'Shea's deserved criticism in the past because he looks slow on the turn, clumsy at times. But what I mean is, last night before the game, I looked when I was watching on the telly, and he looked really focused, and like he was concentrating, and like he really was on a mission. And I thought straight away, I noticed that. Now I can't say I closely watch him normally, be honest, but that was noticeable straight away, and he really. You can't say this without being cliched, but he put in a captain's performance last night, didn't he?
Well, I think he's had of the players, he's been one of the best players this season. I think he's been a solid performer. You don't hear his name sung very often, or Larson's. I think Larson's been really good this season for the most part. The occasional quiet game where he's not been able to impose himself, but I think both of them, they're exactly what normally Sunderland fans would like. They're committed.
I liked Larson's input to the first goal last night with the crossfield ball.
That was lovely.
And it was either the commentator, I can't remember, or the co-commentator, and one of them sort of, the way he described it was like, oh, well, that's a bit ambitious. But he's managed it, and then we scored, which is great. So,
he's got a great range of passing, Larson. He just sometimes can't find the space to use it because he's not the quickest, but that's, you could say that about pretty much our entire squad.
A little bit quicker and a little bit stronger, he would be an outstanding player.
He's not that weak. He's tenacious.
Yeah, but
he's not weak like, say.
if he did have a little bit more power,
I think he's quite combative. I think.
He's wired for games, isn't he? He's the one that's in the referee's ear all the time.
You need one of them.
Yeah,
you need someone. You do, right? Yeah, but you need someone to have a go at the ref. You go back to that. The thing I always remember, apart from the fact I was depressed about losing that Derby 5-1, was Kevin Nolan and Joey Barton refereed it. They were in Dowd's face, in his ear, all the time. That's exactly what you need, at least one of them to do that.
Don't want to get too close to Dowd's face. I might get sucked in.
But Lee Cattermole last night. What do I think about Lee Cattermole? You're talking about combative players and players who are in the referees. I was going to say on the telly he didn't look great, if I'm being honest. But
I thought he
set high standards off himself.
But what I would say about him, I didn't think he wasn't at his best, but he still was doing stuff that had to be done. He was tracking runners into the box. He was on the edge of the box, picking up bits and pieces. He was defending. So he wasn't having a good game by his standards, like you say, but he was still, that's the thing, he battles out of his bad spells, which are quite like he doesn't hide anywhere.
I didn't like, and that's why he got the yellow card, because he just got frustrated, and typically it was a classic Cattermole challenge, wasn't it? But you're right, I don't think he had one, he didn't have one of his better games last night, and Arsenal again he didn't, and by his own admission at Southampton he pulled out the challenge on Schneiderlin because he knew he was on a yellow card. So that's been hanging over in the last couple of weeks as well. It's a shame that he's now going to miss, as he says, 3 weeks of football when he needs to play Saturday to Saturday to Saturday. He could have just held on for another week and picked up the suspension when he's only missing maybe beginning of December, that game against Manchester City, a midweek game, which was his ideal, he says himself. He'd have missed a midweek game and still been playing Saturday to Saturday.
I think that, it's getting to that period after this next international break. If they can get a good result on Sunday, they've got a good chance to set themselves up, because I think if we can get those players back from injury, I mean, Van Aanholt, now he's the latest one to go potentially long term. It could be 6 weeks, couldn't it, that one?
It's a nasty one.
Yeah, so it could be. I mean, it might be two or three games. It might be, because Fletcher came back surprisingly quick from his when he did his at West Brom that time. But that's getting into December time. And then if we can get Alvarez back, we can get Giaccarini back, and then we're going into that. And I think that'll suit Sunderland more than some teams, having the games like coming quickly around around New Year. You know, a game every 2 or 3 days. And we've got players in there that you can pop in.
And I mean, we speak about the lack of attacking options and creative options, like you mentioned there, because Giaccarini and Alvarez are out, and of course Johnson didn't play last night,
yeah.
So he now becomes one of those options, yeah. Doesn't he? Because yeah. He isn't in the starting 11 and he didn't come on. So now you look at him as a player, an impact player from the bench almost, and it changes the dynamics like that a little bit, doesn't it? Just trying to put a positive spin on our weak squad.
Well, I mean, they've shown with character that even though the squad is weak in terms of bodies, they do still have a temperament when they knit together and knuckle down to actually be a difficult team to beat. You know, that terrible accident, as Gus described, Southampton. I mean, nobody saw that coming. And, you know, how many discussions have there been? Had there been that penalty, would the game been different? Would it have been such a scarring sort of defeat?
They weren't playing that badly in the first
half.
They weren't.
And just gifted two goals. I
still personally, I think it was Gus's substitutions that
opened
the wrecking ball.
Yeah.
And had he not made those
makes terrible changes, because I don't know who would say he makes good changes. You know what I mean? Or generally compared to previous managers, right?
No, but they've got that. They've got the win now. Like that, I was saying, this was the game. It was the first big game of the season. They've won the game.
The 8-0 should be gone now, is what you're saying. It's not sort of hanging over you.
But they should be looking forward.
It's a difficult place to go and get a win. I just think
people need to take out, you know, we're not going to be. So I just think sometimes people judge Sunderland at the same level as judging, you know, a top team, and we're not a top team. Sometimes you're just going to have to dig into games and get results, and that maybe he's tried to play a certain way recently and it hasn't quite worked, and as a result have been on the receiving end of, you know, they got beaten off QPR, which is arguably a worse result than the Southampton one in the context of things. And at those points, maybe you've got to look at things and say, well, maybe we just need to take a step backwards, sort of build from the back again, get that solid base in place, and then go from there and try and regain the confidence through winning games, and then try and be a bit more expansive when you've got Giaccarini, you've got Alvarez. But at the moment, you might just have to go pragmatic, be functional, get results, and then when we get these players back, that's when you can go at teams more often.
It's interesting as well that we're actually getting a chance to play one of these Europa League teams.
Yeah.
After they've played on a Thursday.
Oh, and it's
that.
That's a good point.
And if we win, we actually go above Everton,
I know,
which is remarkable.
I'm going to pinch that from a pre-match podcast on Thursday. I never thought of that.
Yeah, it just crossed my mind.
I mean, Everton, I don't think Everton have had the, you know, they've not had a great start by their standards. And Europa League, some of that Europa League is, how, you know, haunts teams. Yeah. And is it because of that? I don't know, but I think it's a good time for Sunderland to play them.
Look at Spurs. I mean, Newcastle, one example of a team that kind of needed a win and they beat them. But they've lost other games. They lost against West Brom at home. Everton.
And yet when we saw them at the Stadium of Light, they looked like a world beaters. Thought that team is going to be one hell of a team. And since then, as you say, they haven't been able
to... I don't think
so.
Everton's Sunday record's been too great.
That's what I'm saying. Like, they beat Burnley, but come on. You know, it was Burnley.
Well, they're not scoring goals. That, you know, at the minute, it's a good time to,
I think,
to play them at home, I think.
Especially off the bat of a win.
Yeah.
What is really important for Sunderland is that they get ahead in games. Because when they go behind, I think they really struggle to get back into it. But when we get ahead,
before Southampton, though, they hadn't, because Tottenham struck early and we went down a goal down to Man U, and then
we were behind at West Brom. Actually.
Yeah, and they came back into it.
Went,
I think
went up at West Brom, didn't they?
Yeah, then down.
But then went down.
Yeah. Yeah.
But if you look at,
I think the characters looked okay before that. Obviously, what we're hoping is that anomaly against Southampton.
Marco Gabbiadini made that point before the Palace game. He said he would like to see Sunderland score first. And see what that, how that makes the, and there's an argument for that last night. Okay, they got away with the penalty, but Sunderland did score first, and you always had the feeling. I had that feeling they would, but they, you know, even they conceded the equaliser, they would still, you know, get their noses in front again. I think it changes
you
the dynamic in a team's
there,
heads if they do get the goal.
Yeah, if we've gone behind,
Palace,
I think we
would
have
lost. And I said to you guys again when we were talking yesterday, and I said Palace will give you chances, didn't I? I think that was. We all kind of knew.
Well,
the
manager's a Championship manager, isn't he? He's
barely
won
now.
Well. He's almost a parody of himself in a way.
Pathetic last night. Embarrassing, that was. just to, for him to say the things he said. At one point, criticising Sunderland, were you too nice because Sunderland kicked the ball out of play once or something, or what? Like, grow up. Like, look at the deficiencies you've got in your team and try and fix it. I mean, they're slagging the referee off. You know, like, sometimes managers will come out and go, I wasn't happy with this decision, but if I talk about the referee, I'll get in trouble. He just, like, turns every question about the referee's decisions, no matter what it is.
But what was great is because we knew that was coming as well, didn't we? I was actually waiting in anticipation for his interview, thinking, and I was actually sad.
You said it last.
I said, I can't wait for... I can't wait for Warnock's interview because he's just going to moan about the penalty.
He uses it and he uses that as his...
Is he a qualified referee?
He uses that as a stick.
He's a qualified something.
But he uses that, that's his sort of justification for making comments about referees, isn't it? Because he feels he's in a position to be able to do so because he knows the rules. But
I imagine he'll also be a qualified manager and he needs to maybe focus more on the fact he's that than a qualified referee because he isn't actually working.
But he's a whiner.
Referee.
I mean,
you'd be worried if you were Palace.
Every time I see him, he's just whining.
If you were, you would be worried if you were a Palace fan, they were saying we were absolutely terrific tonight. Because if that's their version,
is that
of terrific,
what he said?
Yeah,
he said they were brilliant. He said they were brilliant. It's like you had one shot on target and you got beat 3-1.
That was a pretty poor game in general, and they just huffed and puffed. Yeah. It reminded me a bit of us under Bruce towards the end when we'd pile in at teams for about 20 minutes and then run out of gas and lose 1-0.
Get broken on.
Yeah, which obviously didn't quite exactly the same, but...
Right, all right. Question of the week now.
I haven't got one.
Have you not?
No.
We'll not
well,
do
you
that
should
then.
Know, shouldn't you? You're involved in the
well,
quiz.
Well, I don't.
You should look a panic on guys' face then when you
I know.
Oh, you God, mean you haven't sourced one, it? You
blank of, make one up and make up some answers. Come on.
Who
is with
better,
it. You've got to
Messi
wing it.
Or Ronaldo?
Yeah. Yeah.
Well, actually, here's my question. Will we be able to get off here in time to watch Real Madrid-Liverpool?
That sounds like
will Barini start for Liverpool tonight? Well, he should,
already.
In my opinion.
If you get the internet on.
IMHO, he should be.
Do you think? Because between them, those... Well, we're not going to start.
I know,
that's Liverpool.
welcome to the Anfield.
Come on, yeah, welcome to the Anfield. You just had to get Barini in because we...
Well,
we,
oh, he's been in it.
Oh,
Nick dropped
the B-bomb earlier. Yeah, of course he did. Oh, well.
I hope people pick that up because it went mental, what do you call it? There's my technical knowledge.
Sorry,
what do you call it?
It was just mostly nonsense.
The thingy-me-jig
was going off the charts.
I hope this is getting edited out because
we don't waste time editing things out.
The shows would be generally
a lot better if we could be bothered to do that, but we don't.
No, I don't have the word. This is what people tune in for.
If people
great
want
banter.
If people want it.
Yeah. I mean, we could easily go back and edit out the bit where I said, what's the question of the week, but we won't do that.
No.
We're just like,
the question
look like a
of the week. Somebody caught in touch and said, oh, is there a question this week? And I said, no.
I thought there was.
No, that shows how on the ball you are.
I've been busy.
Maybe we need to have a chat about your input in our social network and output because...
That's why I got Craig on board, though.
Well, but I've been away.
All he's done is gone, well, let's have a Facebook page.
Yeah, I know.
Right, okay.
Got bored of that.
Now you've got to update it. You update it.
I'll come up with the idea,
and then you've got to update it.
I do update it occasionally. I've been away this weekend, I've not had time.
Oh, you're always away.
Well, yeah, sorry, I've got a social life.
I've been away on one of these hipster holidays.
Yeah, I've been
in a London
he's got
flat.
That Kevin Kilbane at the Cashpoint story, he's got loads of those.
He's been to Shoreditch.
Made friends with an American on the train home. You know, I've been broadening my social circle.
Yeah. Where was he from? Dallas, did you say?
Yeah.
Was this Simon the Indian Texan?
Yeah. I made friends with... I went to Leighton Orient on Saturday. I made friends with a Spurs fan who had given up Spurs after reading a couple of books about... like lower league football.
One of these people.
No, well, he said he was giving it a try. It was the
you're
first
gonna,
time.
You're going
like
to go
nice
down
ball.
That road, Craig. I can tell it.
No, it was fun at Orient.
You're supporting Darlington in a few years, won't he?
It'd be Darlington too big.
Coventry, was that?
It was Coventry, yeah. So we had a bit of a laugh.
Something
West
End
singing Jimmy Hills or something over there. And, you know,
enjoying some.
We had a bit of banter together.
What was that about your social life?
Well, I know, yeah. What was I doing when you were there? I was just in the house in my dressing gown watching the football. That was mine. I drank three cans of beer and had a whiskey at the end.
Well, then I had a lot more drinks after that. And
this is good, isn't it? I'm not editing this out.
It's an exciting my weekend, isn't it?
Yeah.
You asked for it.
Is anybody still listening?
Well, that was the question of the week. What did Craig get up to when he was in London for 3 nights?
More than that, I think
it was
five. Right?
Simon, did he talk to Simon the Indian Texan?
Wait until the book comes out.
Who's ghostwriting your book?
I don't need a ghostwriter, do I? I'm doing it myself.
Well,
I'll get Nick to do the audio book version.
Nick wrote a book, didn't he, about Keane, and then he got sacked.
Yeah. Graham Anderson and I both met, wrote books and weeks
well,
after
you can
they
still
came out,
because you might be able to buy it on Amazon
timing,
for cheap.
Timing, isn't it?
Yeah. You might be able to get it on Amazon for like one penny or something.
Books.
So.
Brilliant books.
Oh, I'm going to dig it out, try and find it and read it.
Yeah.
Oscar.
You should bring out your copies of your ever popular via the medium of Twitter. Your match day.
The matchbook.
Matchbook. Yeah.
Oh, yeah. I tried to go to Brentford on Saturday, right, and they wouldn't let us in because you had to have previously bought tickets. I thought it was a bit silly that they were turning away custom, but it was because Derby had sold their away end out, so they were worried that I don't know.
All right. Okay.
Some Radgies from Derby were going to get tickets in the home end, but it seemed a bit.
We dressed like Ram.
We really have gone off on a tangent now, haven't we? I think we're best.
Have we ever done that at our ground? Is that something that happens everywhere?
I don't know. Listen, right. It's the last episode of a flat now. So if you don't like that,
you haven't turned off already.
Yeah, you probably have turned off already. I'm probably talking to nobody here. we've enjoyed doing the shows, talking about a win. God knows when it'll happen again. Let's be honest. This is Sunderland. Now we'll beat Everton, won't we? No probs at all. Thanks for listening. Over and out.
After being let down by the Football League show lads, Alan and Steve are left feeling increasingly desperate in their attempt to save the flat and salvage their Geordie dreams. Luckily, while sleeping on the sofa, Alan had plenty of time to catch up on his Sky Sports News viewing, and amidst the hopeless prayers he might see Newcastle link with a new signing, he has an idea when a familiar face pops up on screen, hanging out of a car window. Steve, I know it's your dream to be amongst your people, but they're not mine. I've tried and I've tried to appease them. I've lit their collective 52,000 screaming backsides, but they won't listen. Even when they can see we're straggling worse than Atem is with his gut, they give us no sympathy. You've got to work on your addiction, Steve. You can't keep bidding for strikers. It's not healthy and it's not helpful. Maybe you need to follow in the footsteps of the mother, Jody, Gaza, and get some help. Maybe it's time to sell up. I know just the man who can do us a deal.
Sorry to hear you feel like that, Alan. Absolutely I am. For starters, you know you're only as good as your strikers. There's nothing wrong with wanting more of them. Better ones. You'll not get far in this league without girls, Alan. You should know that more than most. Without you, there's no flat, though. That's for sure. And maybe I can work more on doing a deal for Benjani if I'm in Hull more often. I know this is a glorious location, but who's going to offer us the money we need?
Harry, of course. He's always in that car of his talking to journos. I'll ring Joe up. He can put the phone up to any manager in the world, so we'll get the message on Harry.
Of course. I've great admiration for the man, and you never know. If he heads up here, maybe there's a chance I can sign Bobby off him. He loves his strikers, and I've got Matty Fryett here to offer an exchange. Absolutely. This is the best idea you've had since blaming everything on the Europa League. Delightful, Alan.
The next day, Alan is sat in front of Sky Sports News with that mournful, bittersweet look of resignation on his face as Newcastle are yet again linked with nobody in the transfer market when that familiar face pops up on the screen again in an even more familiar location. Steve, put that biscuit down, he's here. Harry, me old macker. We thought you wasn't going to come. I heard nothing from Joe after I called him last night.
No, Alan, it's terrific that you called. I've always fancied investing up here. I couldn't text you to let you know, because of me illiteracy and all that. And Joe was off on one at the end of the call. Something about when he won the league in Ghana, and they made him king. You know what he's like.
All too well, Harry. But at least you're here. That's the main thing. I need to get back to me roots.
All right, Harry. Great to see you. Heard you're looking to offload Bobby. Fancy a swap with us for Matty Fryett. He'll not let you down, that's for sure. I thought was he about a flat? What's all this about, Alan? I've told you all before, I'm not a f***ing wheelie dealer.
Calm down, Arrow. You know Stevie's got... Well, he's got a thing for strikers, hasn't he? You should know this. It's why you blocked his phone, but back to the matter in hand. What can you do for us, Harry?
Well, lads, I don't do deals, as you know. But I've been on to Tony before I came up here, and he said I got a cracking deal done with a landlord to get you out of contract. I've not been able to read the terms myself, but I trust the man. I must say, lads, it's a top, top flat. Even I wouldn't mind living up here.
Well, I didn't think it'd be this emotional, but, well, it's me roots. And I'm not one to give up, and it's, well, leaving me bitterly disappointed. Just look at that cup run. We ran through brick walls to stay in there, beating just one Premier League side on our way to the final, and that was without Jelly and Longy. Well, at least I can say I've gone down fighting again. But, well, it hurts.
Steve, don't talk about caps in front of Alan. It's a sensitive subject. Since he took one of my old clubs, West Ham, to the Gerrard final, he's not been able to have a go since. They won't let him up here. It's not the Newcastle way. Neither of you managed to win it like I did anyway. Landlord tomorrow, wrap the deal up, now Tony's sorted it, and I've got the man to move in.
The sun rises over the River Tyne, shining on Bruce's lamentable face. He spent all night staring out over his city. Just like you can't trust a loan signing, you just can't trust renting.
Yes, well, it's said to be uprooted once again, but I'll be back one day. I'll buy next time. It'll be better than another loan, I mean rental, that's for sure.
Don't be too down, Steve. Just think of the money you'll left for strikers when you're back living at the KC rent-free. You can get them in for talks any hour of the day or night.
Well, watch, Steve, it's Bendy. Fancy Nando's manga.
Well, what's this? Stabbed in the back? Where's Harry?
What you want about, Steve? He's off back down landing, innit? This is my new what's-it, tenant. He's helping Alan May come in with a bid for me, you see. He's signed me up, but he wants me to move on again. Something about his Mrs. Sandra. I'm not having all that again.
Well, at least Joe's not here to scupper her chances this time. We almost had your dad's till he stepped in. I remembers it well. Graham followed you to Nice. I know you wanted Nando's, but the hard rock had to do. You was happy. Joe takes you to Nando's, gets a chicken cob and coleslaw order, then offers you less per week than your last pair of trainers cost. Poor. I'll get on a blow to Mike. If you're free, we'll have a look-see. You're a top pro, Daz, with your future in front and behind you, in and around the box.
Well, this isn't quite being hounded out, but talk about being stabbed in the back. This hurts. On my own turf, too. Wanted to put roots down back in the homeland. And now you're negotiating for the one that got away, Alan? I don't think so. Benty, how about you come back with me to Hull? You can commute. Once bitten, twice shy, you know.
Bruv, this is my place now. Can you go and guess outside? You can both speak to me agent. Whoever gets me in Nando's gets first dibs, all right?
With the return of Benty, the Geordie dream has died. Will Alan Pardew ever be able to afford to live on his own? Or will Graham Carr have to find him an average, reasonably priced chalet in the Dordogne? Will Steve Bruce ever cure his striker addiction? Will he ever get over his time at Sunderland? Well, no, as it happens. But most importantly, will Steve and Alan's paths ever cross again? Who knows? Their search for the Geordie dream continues.